The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
It's Wednesday. Good afternoon. Welcome in. We are happy that you've decided to drop in. We hope you'll stick around. We have a lot going on. Let's get right to it with some game time. Yeah, it's that time of the year. It's May, and we're starting to find out when our favorite football games will be. More will come later, but how about these? LSU and Florida State, that's prime time. Same spot as it was last year. That game is in Orlando. On the 9th, Texas and Alabama, that figures to be a major attraction in prime time. Oklahoma, Texas is back on ABC, where it belongs. Notre Dame, Clemson, that's always a game that you have to see on November 4th. And it's good news if you're a fan of EA Sports. They're letting football FBS players opt in to the 24 video game. That, according to an EA Sports representative today. Meanwhile, everything is happy. We're all in this Titanic, excuse me, we're all in this boat together, says Jim Phillips.
Oh, boy.
This is according to McMurphy. He's confident the Magnificent Seven are now on board. What I've been told is that we're all in this together emphatically. Whoa. We all believe in the ACC. We want to continue to work together. In other words, we got our checks today. Phillips on being third behind the SEC Big Ten. It's never good enough. Are we sure they're third? Anything else we can do is close the gap. Will exponentially, is that a word that you often see used in terms of trying to catch up, help our schools? We're figuring this thing out. I know the reports, the conversations. I feel we have a really connected group. Let's get back to the SEC, where nobody's trying to explain why they're number three. How about trap games, upsets? A&M playing at Tennessee, that's a sneaky good game. Why don't we ask Brad Crawford? Because I didn't write the article. I just read it. Brad Crawford, nice enough to join us again. Brad, good afternoon. You've done some pretty serious mining of the SEC games. What stood out to you other than some of the things that I just mentioned? There's some choice matchups and a lot of upset possibilities. Good afternoon.
Yeah, it's good to see you, Paul. Everyone's talking this offseason about Georgia's cakewalk schedule and how the Bulldogs are going to just show up and go ahead and scribble in with Sharpie, Georgia 12-0, making the SEC championship again. I think there's a few games on Georgia's schedule where upsets could happen, maybe some worry. They go to Auburn in week four, I think it is. That's going to be the first true road game for a lot of these first-year starters. Kirby Smart has quarterback Carson Beck, hostile environment on the plane. So you just never know. But Georgia's going to be favored, like we've seen all offseason, and likely every game. Obviously, the Tennessee road trip in November is the biggest game on the schedule. And with the win total at 11.5 right now, it's probably safe to go over on Georgia. But like I said, there's a couple games where I think Kirby Smart's going to have to prepare a little bit extra in order to win.
You've got some other really interesting matchups. One that stood out to me was October 7th. LSU at Missouri. I think that game went Missouri's way a couple of years ago. And, you know, for all the talk about LSU winning the West, they're going to have to survive Alabama later in the year. But Missouri, you obviously look at very early in the season. Why?
Yeah, a lot of starters back on that defense for Eli Drinkwitz. I think a lot of times last season, Missouri kind of hung around in games against ranked teams because of that defense. Nearly knocked off Georgia in Columbia. Here's another opportunity for Missouri to host a top 10 SEC opponent at home and potentially win. And like I said, this is a team that almost got over the hump last season with better quarterback play this fall. Maybe it happens for Eli Drinkwitz. LSU needs to play well in this game in order to win at Missouri.
You've got two games on the 16th, Carolina at Georgia. We saw that years ago. Will Muschamp pulled that upset. Not happening this time. I'll go ahead and answer your question. But the one that I'm really interested in is Tennessee at Florida. It's a game more than likely the Gators are going to lose on the road to Utah. Tennessee riding high after that big win last year over Florida and almost everyone else but Georgia. What intrigues you about this game at the Swamp?
Yeah. Part of the reason the Gamecocks won that game in Athens a couple of years ago was Jake Fromm had four turnovers in that game. Just a shocking display of ineptitude from a really good quarterback. Look, Tennessee and Florida is a top game this season because Tennessee hasn't won in the Swamp since 2003. I was in high school, Paul, and Florida was still nationally relevant right before the Tebow multiple titles and Urban Meyer year. So I saw the Gators preseason win total last week at 5.5. This is going to be a bottom dweller in the SEC, according to odds makers. So it's a game Tennessee has to have if Josh Heupel wants to keep building this momentum from last year's top 10 finish.
Wow, 2003. I hadn't even gotten my AARP card yet, so it was a long time ago. Let's get to the national scene and talk about what stands out, because there are a handful of most people think it's Georgia and maybe Ohio State, Alabama as an outlier. But let's talk about some of the things that really intrigue you. Southern Cal, nobody wants to believe in them because of the defense. Do you think they're going to show back up?
I think Caleb Williams has to have a 45-touchdown pass, 4,500-yard season. Lincoln Riley has one of the best transfer portal classes in college football, has done that for a second straight year. But you mentioned in your opening, Paul, that the Pac-12 might be college football's third-best conference. And Southern Cal, you see the schedule there, has several tough games. You know, that game at Colorado is going to be an easy one. The first half of that schedule is easy, but then you go to Notre Dame. Then you host Utah, who trounced USC last year in the Pac-12 title game. Washington, Oregon, UCLA to end the season. So several top 15, top 20 matchups for Lincoln Riley this year. But I do think USC is a team that should be on that national championship shortlist because of Caleb Williams coming back.
Call me a Nick Saban acolyte, but I want to believe, in spite of all the criticism, that Saban's going to prove everyone wrong. But you remind me of why I haven't said that out loud. The quarterback play. What's going on there?
Yeah, man. It's kind of surprising to me that this is the first time in Saban's tenure where we've sort of seen him scramble under center coming out of spring practice. He didn't like what Ty Simpson had to offer. Jalen Milroe didn't show enough on the A-Day game to appease that offensive staff. So Tommy Reese reached into the portal, got Tyler Buckner from Notre Dame. I'm not even sure Tyler Buckner is going to be QB1 by the time this is all hashed out, but obviously Bama did not feel good about its situation. There's stars all over the field, but if Bama does, you know, finish 11-1, maybe get to Atlanta and play Georgia in that SEC championship game, they're going to have elite quarterback play. And what they're going to miss most about Bryce Young this fall is escapability and his ability to make things happen when things broke down last season.
Brad, we can't talk about Georgia without mentioning the schedule and all the things that are baked into the cake. They'll be preseason number one. They're going for a three-peat. Give us a reason not to believe in the Dogs, because almost everyone does.
Quarterback play would be less than stellar. I mean, we've seen the last couple of years, Stetson Bennett has been just A1 for them. Now you're moving to Carson Beck. I think I said last month on your show, Paul, that Carson Beck's a guy at plus 2,500 right now in the Heisman race that I'd take a flyer on, because based on what I've heard throughout spring practice, he was elite against Georgia's first-team defense. And to be honest with you, judging by that schedule, that's probably the best athletes he's going to face defensively throughout the regular season. So unless Carson Beck is, you know, not the QB1 guy and they got to go to Brock Vandergriff or Gunnar Stockton, I think Georgia is a, you know, Sharpie favorite to win the SEC again. But like I said, you have to have elite quarterback play to win the playoff. In the last couple of years, Georgia's had that with Stetson Bennett.
And Ohio State had it last year, and they nearly did it with Stroud. They've got a lot of great players on their roster, but what do you make out of the Buckeyes? Because for some reason, I want to believe in them.
And you should, but there's pressure on Ryan Day. He's 45-6. Obviously, he came within a couple of yards of beating Georgia last season in the playoff. But back-to-back losses to Michigan has created some – maybe some undue unrest, so to speak, in Columbus entering this season. They've got a new quarterback as well, Kyle McCord. Basically, all of these preseason contenders have a new starting quarterback this season except Michigan, and McCarthy was able to beat Ohio State last year. So I think Ohio State's defense has to play better. Jim Knowles entering year two as the DC on that side of the ball. So Ohio State's a team that, you know, worthy of all the hype right now. But Ryan Day, if he loses for a third straight year to Michigan – you're going to hear some chatter coming out of Columbus.
Oh, I wouldn't even let him out. Let him leave the stadium. I mean, that's it. You lose to Michigan three times. You're not on the bus back to Columbus. Hey, Brad, great to see you. Thank you always. It's fun to catch up. Brad Crawford starting off the program. And I was kidding about that for those of you out there looking for a headline. We are not done yet. Wetzel joins us next hour on a number of topics. Jason Swain, haven't talked to Jason in a long time. He'll be here. And Matt Michelle from the Orlando Sentinel on the Kumbaya songs coming out of the ACC meetings and your phone calls in just a moment at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back. It was a year ago on this Wednesday night. Do you remember what the big story of that night was? Scene was Birmingham, Alabama. Meeting for the World Games, and the two guests being interviewed were Nate Oates and Nick Saban. And that's the night that Nick Saban went off on Jimbo Fisher the next morning, on Thursday morning out in College Station. A year ago tomorrow, it was Jimbo Fisher calling Saban a narcissist, saying he should have been slapped as a kid. That he had a godlike complex. He was despicable.
Isn't that a movie?
And that he once stole somebody's lunch money in fourth grade. My oh my, has a lot happened for both those gentlemen in a year. They both now watch Kirby Smart move past them as the SEC's top coach. We are taking your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We're open for business. Sounds like a good book, doesn't it? Go for it. Trey is up first in Arkansas. Hello, Trey.
How you doing today, Paul?
Hey, Trey. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's been a little bit, but yeah, I was wanting to talk about how Arkansas has just been going insane in the portal, and you're right. Wouldn't you think about it? Last year, A&M was supposed to be really good. Alabama was supposed to win the national championship. Georgia done it again. My, how those dipsticks went bad.
It's amazing, Trey, how that worked out. It really was one of the most amazing stories that I've ever seen. And for about 2 weeks, it held our attention, and then it just went away. It came back a little bit, and then Jimbo's team was terrible, and Saban's team was threatened early, and eventually was taken down a couple of times, and the story literally vaporized. John is in Louisville. Good afternoon.
Hey, can you hear me well? I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Wow. Hold on, I'm going to get my daughter to say hi.
Hi, Paul. Hi.
Oh, they're in a bad mood.
That was one of the least enthusiastic hellos I've ever had, and I've had a few.
I know. I thought that. Hey, Paul. Yeah, I would say Karma visited Jimbo more than Nick Saban last year.
Karma bit Jimbo in the you know where.
Yeah. Hey, the two biggest games I see coming up. Obviously, Ohio State, Michigan. They drew 19 million. That was a well-watched game. But I think besides that being a big, like, championship-type game determined if you get in the CFP, I think the Florida State-LSU will decide the fate of those two teams if they're going to be a player.
Yeah, I totally agree because they both have big games down the road. And by the way, what are you doing out in Flagstaff?
My daughter's going to North Hollywood.
Wow, interesting.
I kid you not.
Now I'm trying to remember. Is Flagstaff right before you start trending toward the Grand Canyon?
We went to Albuquerque and then Flagstaff, and we'll go by Phoenix. I think LA's about 480 miles away.
Okay, yeah. I mean, a couple of years ago, I went up to the Grand Canyon from Phoenix. I think we stopped in Flagstaff. Can't remember, but we got snowed on whatever it was.
Yeah, there's snow up in the top hills around here.
Yeah. Well, enjoy the trip to Hollywood. Thank you. Augie is in the Big Easy.
Yeah, it's a big sleazy, actually, as you almost said. Paul, last year, John went to Rome with his daughter and some other girls, right?
I think so.
This year, he's going to Arizona with his daughter. You didn't ask him if he was going with those other girls.
Well,
need to know.
I'm respectful when a father calls up and says he's taking his daughter. I don't go TMZ on him. I just act like I don't understand what he's saying.
You kept your period interest in check, but
I was far more interested in Flagstaff than I was his daughter.
I got that you were trying to change the subject quickly because he might have brought up the fact that there were others attending. But, you know, hey, I'm hoping John has a good time. But getting back to, first of all, I want to tell you, Paul, you are absolutely wrong in LSU baseball. They're absolutely horrible. They lost the series.
Augie, before you go on, I just want to say to you, and I'm not one that's judgmental, but I've seen
Third ring. We're entering the third ring.
I am not a judgmental person. But I have found some of your social media criticism of the LSU baseball team to be despicable. These are young players. You're criticizing them as if they're the New York Yankees.
They were built up.
That wasn't their fault. They didn't build themselves up. They just signed up.
Oh, come on. They relished in it. They lived in the limelight. And now they're getting beat in a series by Mississippi State, who's about to fire their coach, Chris Lemonis. That's terrible. It's despicable that they get beat by Nickel State, get beat by ULL. Anyway,
I just don't really find it a good look when an adult starts just incinerating young 19, 20-year-old players on a baseball team.
No. These young 19-year-olds.
A college baseball team.
Yeah, well, when I was 20 and 19 and not on the baseball team, they were living the high life as gods and princes. So you take the good with the bad, Paul. That's part of college sports these days. And with NIL, people have a right to criticize professionals playing college ball. But off of that subject, LSU baseball is dead to me this year.
I want to go on the record right now and say I hope, I fervently hope, and I'm supposed to be neutral sitting in here in the high chair, I hope LSU wins the College World Series, and we are going to rub it in your face.
I hope you do, because you know what? I will let Jay Johnson throw a pie in my face if he wins it. But I have no confidence in that guy. I think he's just lost the team. But I want to talk about Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher.
Okay.
Do you think Jimbo Fisher was right in saying Nick Saban is a narcissist?
I'm not a judgmental person, Augie. So.
just judge me. Okay, what about this? Should Nick Saban have been slapped as a four-year-old kid?
Yes, I do think he should have been. And I think he was.
Oh, my God. So is Jimbo Fisher living on a short leash, long leash, or medium leash?
I don't think Jimbo is really in imminent danger. And I talk to A&M people, hear from them occasionally, and they are not panicking about their program, much like you are about your baseball program.
Well, they need to be. They need to be as panicked as I am about my team. See, I'm more interested in criticizing my team when they're bad than jumping on other teams when they beat us, because that's what other teams are supposed to do. But we're supposed to beat them. So I'm more critical of my team, like the Ed Ogeron team of post-world championship fame. I see LSU baseball in the same trouble. And, oh, by the way, LSU basketball seems to be on a shelf for the next 10 to 15 years. Anyway, thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Augie. Always great to get Augie's objective opinion. Rick is in Houston.
Oh, my God, Paul. Thank you for what you said to Augie about criticizing the young guys on the LSU baseball team. I have bitten my tongue and not replied to some of his Twitter posts just because I just didn't want to.
I'm the biggest believer in freedom of expression, but I personally called Elon Musk before the show and asked him to take Augie's Twitter handle away.
I mean, my God, man, some of his posts, he acts like Skip
Jim
Bergman
from Tuscaloosa
never
phone.
Ever lost
there,
a,
anyway.
A baseball game.
It's absurd. And when the season is over, I think you have a right to say, you know what, I saw this early on. But, I mean, he is such a reactionary. The baseball season hasn't even begun yet for LSU because they started off number one. They've had some difficulty holding on. And so they lose a series now and then. They're still going to be in really good shape when the NCAA tournament comes out in a week and a half, and then it's on. We'll see where they go. But I just find it to be distasteful.
Very distasteful. I mean, some of his comments about the young men were just they were over the line, and I just absolutely wanted to thank you for what you said. I love LSU, and in. Next to football, baseball is my absolute second favorite college sport. And these kids are playing their tails off. They're having a great year. Yeah, we've lost. You know, we've not won two SEC series. Look at any other school in the SEC, and I doubt if anyone's doing any better.
It's incredibly competitive. But hey, thanks for the call. We're heading to a break. Number of guests will be joining us throughout the afternoon. More of your phone calls. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we welcome all of you back. Let's continue with more phone calls. Mitch is up next. Hello, Mitch.
Sir Paul.
Yes.
How is your day?
it's moving along quite well.
I have a question, and you know I have made it a pretty well a good habit of not asking questions about other callers because you really can't answer what they're thinking. But Augie, he's an attorney, right?
Yes.
Okay, he's an active attorney, right? He's not retired.
No, he is a he's currently what is he, a real estate attorney or labor employment attorney? Yeah, he's definitely an attorney, active.
Then how does he have time to go on Twitter all the time, worry about what people are putting on Twitter?
Mitch, hold on a second. I mean, are you familiar with the law business?
I'm very familiar.
Yeah, I mean, here's what happened. I mean, after attorneys screw over their clients, they do have to rest and find other things to do while the checks are clearing.
Well, you kind of cleared the topic up because I'm like, okay, you're billing your client $350 an hour, maybe. It might be more.
Yeah, you might want to go up on that, depending on the locale.
But yet you have all this time to be a Twitter master.
Oh yeah, no, there's attorneys have these little things under their desk. So what do they call them? Little foot pedals, where they're always kicking. I mean, they're on the phone, with their kids, and they're kicking that another quarter hour on the bill. For whatever corporation or client or whatever.
I mean, I just wonder because, as you know, I work in a professional field that I don't have time to call you every day.
No, I mean you're a serious worker.
I just wonder because he always mentions what he read on Twitter. Now he's going to mention me calling you.
Oh, you will be the subject of a tirade.
Oh, I will be, but Augie, the sad thing is I won't read it because I don't have a Twitter account.
Ooh.
I don't care what people say about me.
I don't either. I've never read Twitter in my life other than right now.
I don't have YouTube. I don't have any.
You don't have
that.
YouTube? Are you serious?
I work for a medical field that if I put the wrong thing on, I will lose my job.
I mean, I couldn't live without YouTube. Could you, Randy?
No.
I wake up.
No, sir. I mean, I wake up
to YouTube
dumb.
Every morning. I thought you said you too, not YouTube. I'm sorry. I'm.
Oh, now you too. Now
yeah,
I love
Joshua
you too.
Tree's confused.
Yes. Yes. You. Yes.
I'm hearing you. Hey, but thanks, Mitch. I mean, Mitch spent 5 minutes telling us why he's too busy reading that he doesn't have time to read Augie's tweets.
But he cracked about it.
Charles is up next.
Hello,
Charles.
Paul, how you doing?
Charles, we are doing well.
Oh, man, it's been a long time, man. For y'all, the people don't know, I'm Uncle Charles, man. I've been born and bred with the Alabama Crimson Tide since 1978. But let me tell you something, Paul. I don't care what Jimbo said about Coach Saban. Oh, come on, really? Why don't you get another national championship? That's what you need to do. You need about 15 more of those right there. Oh, man, nobody cares about it. He's walking around here like he John Gotti. Nobody want to hear that he got a thing. Let me tell you something. The only coach that really matter in this league, in the SEC, is Nick Saban. But I tell you this, boy, Nick don't be playing, don't he? Let me tell you something. Everybody asks me, who's my favorite player on the Alabama Crimson Tide team? I say, I don't got no favorite team. My favorite is Coach Saban. Let me tell you something. Boy, you got to give it to Coach Saban. When he had that A-Day game, he got that pink blazer on and his swag on 250, you can't tell him that. Them Stacey Adams, he ain't nothing to play with. Boy, he's so smooth when he's going out. We want your son to play for Alabama. Then you get into practice and you find out something way different. And next thing you know, whammo, bammo, boom. You gonna wake up big because coach ain't playing. But I can tell you this, and I'm gonna say this in closing. The greatest coach of all time is Bear Bryant. Bear Bryant, let me tell you something. Bear Bryant didn't play. boy, he'd be up in that tower with that big old bucket of lemonade, ice cold lemonade, and you'd be down that field about to die out there. He said, run it one more time, coach. He said, I'm going to run it one more time. Coach, they've been out here all night. Run it one more time. And you'd be about dead. You know you dead when you don't want to take a bath. You know you tired. You don't want to take a bath. You know you real tired then. But there ain't over two great coaches in Alabama, and that's Nick Saban and Bob Bryant, and we need to keep it that way. Appreciate you, Paul.
Thank you, Uncle Charles. It has been too long. DJ is up next in Florida. Hello, DJ. DJ, are you there? I think DJ realized he could not follow Uncle Charles. But Dustin can. Dustin and
Tulsa. Hey, Paul Feinbaum. I'm gonna start calling you like Dwayne does. Hey, Paul Feinbaum. Paul Feinbaum. You listening, Paul Feinbaum? man, I called in to defend Augie. I can't let everybody just jump on him. I like old Augie. I think he's pretty entertaining. I mean, I don't think he's as good a fan as I am. I think I'm a better Razorback fan.
He's as entertaining as a case of hemorrhoids.
Well, depending on your perspective, that could be entertaining or not. I actually heard that he's working for this. He's a junior attorney at this law firm down there called Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. I like Augie. His Twitter's entertaining. I think he's...
Well, my only point, Dustin, was... I mean, he's not just criticizing. It's one thing to say disappointing loss. Come on, guys. I mean, he is eviscerating these young players. That's uncalled for.
I will agree with you there. It's almost like he's got them in cross-examination or something. I can see I've never appreciated fans, and I'm not taking a shot at Augie here, just across the board. I get accused of being a sunshine pumper sometimes because I'm very positive and upbeat about the team, and I always want to support the kids because I realize, hey, I'm 42. The people that I'm watching on television every day, many of them aren't even in their early 20s yet, so they really are kids. You don't want to go after them personally. I understand being upset with the team, but you don't want to, like you said, eviscerate these poor kids who are just out there trying to, you know, make their way in life. But anyway, I do like Augie. He is entertaining. I think he's a pretty good guy at heart. But, man, he's emotional, and he does kind of let it go sometimes. I would agree with you there.
Well, we will chalk you up, Dustin, as the only supporter of Augie. Thank you for the call. Reed is in Georgia. Hello, Reed.
Hey, Mr. Paul. How you doing?
We are well. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Just want to talk for a minute about Georgia and their 2024 recruiting class. Obviously, I know you can't name specific names, but what do you think critics in the SEC will say about Georgia once they get this big time quarterback in?
Well, it's not even the quarterback's commitment that is so important. It's the momentum that it creates. When you're the top wide receiver in the country or the top running back or the top whatever, and you see a guy decommit from Ohio State and go to Georgia, and you look around and there are a couple other five stars and others are considering it. A lot of times recruiting is done in waves. We saw that with Alabama last year. We saw it the year before with Texas A&M, and Georgia's always been top three recruiting, but this just seems to be a different type of year, and they already have more talent than everybody else, but sometimes players just like to go with where the trend lines are, and this year in particular, they're pointing toward Athens.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for letting me come on.
Thank you. And if you're a traditionalist, you don't understand why are we making such a big deal about it. In May, this is when a lot of decisions are made, and there's only 7 months now before signing day. This isn't the old days when the first Wednesday in February. It's now late December, and there's always going to be changes down the stretch. And just because you're second or third, doesn't mean you're having a bad recruiting year. You're not. Except Georgia just seems to be having one of those. I can't believe we've ever seen anything like this type of recruiting classes. We'll take a break. More to come, more of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back. Chip is up next as we continue here on a Wednesday. Hey, Chip.
Hey, Mr. Paul. How you doing today, sir?
Chip, we're doing great. Thank you.
I just wanted to call Augie's comment. I mean, getting down on college kids. I mean, you know, how bad does it get? And, you know, for somebody to do something like that, I'm not real sure that Augie could fall off a log in a lake and find water. That was wrong, and I'm going to give him some advice, and hopefully you put it on the air. When there's whiz in the boot, the directions are on the heel. Apparently, he doesn't know that, so apparently he can't pull whiz out of a boot, and if you'll give him that direction, I'll appreciate it.
Gee whiz, I will tell him. Thank you. Daniel is up next. Hello, Daniel.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
So I wanted to get your take on how you think Auburn's going to do this season, and what do you think about our new quarterback, Peyton Thorne?
I think Thorne is a great addition. I think Auburn will do well. I don't think they'll have a great season, but I think based on everything I've seen, heard, and we had a chance to visit with Freeze a week ago, that things are really going well down there. I think a 7-win season, 8-win maybe is possible, and people will say that doesn't seem like a lot. Well, I think it does. It is a lot when you compare it to really where that program was a year ago.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know how Auburn is always when they're looked as the underdog, so I feel like we'll definitely have some stuff to say in the West.
I think there's some games to be won that could be an upset. Hey, thank you very much for your call. Ryder is up next. Ryder, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
We are doing okay. Thank you.
I'm calling to see what you think about the Florida Gators' ceiling this year and what you think Graham Mertz can lead the boys to this year, what the ceiling is.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty low ceiling. Unless I'm missing a lot, I don't look for a great season. I think Mertz is a serviceable quarterback based on what we've seen. The schedule to me looks daunting. Utah, Florida State is among your two non-conference. Not sure either one is winnable. At Kentucky, at South Carolina, at LSU, at Missouri. I don't know how many wins, if there are any wins there. Tennessee at home, that's almost become a must-win. So you tell me. You're a fan, and if you take the fandom out of it objectively, what do you see?
Well, from what I saw, I didn't like too much of Mertz in Wisconsin. He has issues reading the field, I think. I'm optimistic. I'm an optimistic fan. I think we can come out maybe 6-6, maybe 7-5, if things go right. But that's a big if, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that would be okay. And there's never been a time in modern Florida history where a winning record would be okay. But I think it's critical that he gets to a winning record in a bowl game and try to get some momentum while he shores up recruiting. And I think he is recruiting pretty well, but compared to what? Compared to Georgia, compared to Alabama, compared to some of the other elite programs. And I think ultimately that is his challenge. You know, Mullen didn't recruit at the highest level. He recruited at a reasonable level. And that's what Napier was brought in to do. And the question is, has he done it?
I mean, DJ Lagway, one of the best quarterbacks coming up in the next class, I think, and he's doing some – in fact, I think I forgot exactly who it was, but one of the wide receivers said that DJ was recruiting him better than any other coach in the country. So, I mean, I think we can get some good quality recruits in. It's just what I was seeing last year, I don't think that Napier used AR the correct way. I didn't like some of the play calling. That's what I did love about Dan Mullen, is he was one of the best play callers in the country. So, I mean – I'll ask you this, Paul. If you don't think that the Florida Gators aren't going to have the best record this year, what do you think? How do you because you know our fans, we're pretty critical. What would you think the fans and the front office are going to do about Billy Napier going forward?
Well, I think if it's anywhere near 500 or below, the pressure for next year will be intense.
Always on in Gainesville.
I think he has a free pass this year. I don't think the record is going to impact him, but the support that he's getting now, and I think he is getting support, and he's deserving of that support, he will lose. There won't be anybody left supporting him if this season goes like last season.
100%. And, you know, I love my Florida Gators. I can say our fan base is one of the harshest in the country.
Well, there are a few schools in the country that have had the success that Florida's had, and the standard is at the top, and I like that. Florida fans don't bother me at all. I think they're great because they expect championships, and when you have everything that the University of Florida has going for it, you ought to be in competition. You ought to be in contention.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.